episode 145. That's Connor Ryan. I'm Evan Marinofsky. Connor, what is up?
Evan, I'm doing all right. I'm here.
You're here. So am I. The dust is not really settled yet for Monday. I don't think it'll ever settle. I think that dust will just stay in the air. Many folks are lucky because I had gotten tickets to go as a fan to the Celtics-Sixers game one the next night. So not only did I have to go back, but I had to go back and watch the team I like lose. So it was just, you know, end of Bruins season. Celtics get punched in the mouth. I take the worst of it. So really, I don't think I'm going back to TD Garden for a very long time. Very long time. Awful. But as I said, the dust has not settled yet. People were I saw some of the tweets. People were not happy that breakup day was only like 2 days later. And it's like, I got to read all these quotes now. I got to see Patrice Bergeron at his stall. Like, are you kidding me? This is too much at too much of a time.
Yeah, I tweeted out my classic back at it. And I think people thought I was just being like an asshole. I'm like, no, I am legitimately here on business. I am here to give you guys sad quotes. So yeah, it was people are going through it as is expected, I think, when you lose a series like that.
Yes. The Bruins posted their thank you fans video on, I think it was on Wednesday, and it's like, really was no good time to post that. But I'm sitting there watching it going, like, it's crazy because the regular season was just like so high up here and the postseason was so low down here, and just, you forget about that regular season. I keep going back to, like, that was a 65-win team who lost in the first round to a wild card team who got in at the end of the regular season, who, by the way, had their way with Toronto in game one. I know no one wants to hear about the Panthers, but, like, you know, it's pretty impressive. It wouldn't be the worst thing. I think people are rooting for the Panthers more than the Maple Leafs, I would assume, right? Like,
You would think so. I mean, again, it also shows you just how much of a not crapshoot, but kind of is, right? When you look at, like, the Panthers, that I think are still a pretty flawed team, but it's all about getting hot at the right time. And again, let's say the Bruins let them off the hook. They had them on the ropes and just refused to give them the haymaker. They did a light jab, little jab to see if it would knock them down. Didn't do it. But you give any team new life and they can go on a run. I mean, Brennan Montour all of a sudden turned into Paul Coffey overnight. You got Kachuk's been great. Like, they are playing a very impressive game, especially in the playoffs right now. So, you know, give them credit, but that's not to absolve the Bruins, who should have, you know, punched their ticket to the second round, over a week ago. So, but yes. Alas, here we are, Evan. Here we are. Sad boy podcasts are back. Sad boy summer is upon us.
It's going to be a long sad boy summer too. This is not like, oh, they lost in the Eastern Conference final. What are you going to do? This was, they were out before May, which is impressive. One last Bruins Panthers thing I want to touch on before we get into kind of big questions that need to still be answered. It is incredible that the Bruins had the Jake DeBrus shorthanded goal in game six, which I said, there's no way the Panthers are coming back from, like, shorthanded goal in the third period, you know, like, you're just, you, no team scores after that. Panthers come back and score from that. Then you go to game seven and you have David Pastrnak's goal. You have the complete comeback from down to nothing. Pastrnak's goal, the place went bananas. I could feel the floor vibrating under me. It was crazy. And then they give up the goal with a minute left, and it goes off McAvoy's stick and over Swayman. And I'm shocked that the Bruins in those two instances, and there were more, but those two specific, couldn't just finish it off. I'm still shocked by that. Again, it doesn't surprise me from their play over the course of the series. It does surprise me, though, from the season as a whole. In terms of questions that still need to be answered about the collapse, those are two, but one of my biggest is, how injured is Linus Olmark? Because we really didn't get a good glimpse of it on Wednesday. Olmark does not want to disclose the injury. He said yes and no as to his injury, and he said it, you know, wasn't that bad. You have the Kevin Weeks report saying it was debilitating. I get we don't need to know injuries, but we are a little curious because again, his game went off a cliff, really, in games in game six. It was not great in game five, looked fatigued. Sweeney and company speak next week. Again, if Ulmark doesn't want to disclose it, I have a tough time believing Sweeney's going to come out and be like, well, it was actually this. I don't expect that to happen. But I think it's a legitimate question of how injured was he?
Yeah, I think probably if you want to focus it around, probably something we'll get more concrete answers to. It's just what the line of thinking was from Montgomery, Bogacenza, and the coaching staff in terms of how they handled that, right? Because, you know, Ulmark made a distinction that in the playoffs, you can play hurt. The difference between being hurt and injured. He said he was hurt, but he wasn't injured. Like, you know, you can play hurt. You can gut through things. That being said, I think he kind of mentioned it in game five where just Ulmark looked taxed because he'd never had a workload like that. That's where, you factor in that he was clearly dinged up with something. Now, is it something that needs surgery? Is it something that's just bumps and bruises that you could probably sort through over an off season of rest? That remains to be seen. I mean, we'll find out if we get that answer. But I think we just look at the optics of Ulmark and how worn down he was at various stages of that series. The fact that the production just wasn't there. How they decided not to at any point, whether it's game five or game six, turn to Swayman earlier on. And it's something that I feel like after Ulmark had that really good game three and bounced back, we're like, all right, I guess, you know, maybe they stick with Ulmark and we go from there. But then between games three and four, Montgomery mentioned, he's like, yeah, you know, maybe we go to Swayman in game four. So all of a sudden we're like, oh, so they are bringing back the rotation. Oh, he's not? All right, well, he's in for game four, does well again. So at that point, you're still like, I feel like in terms of the media or anyone who's trying to read the tea leaves, you're like, all right, well, clearly they think Ulmark still has it, but it's still very present in their minds that Swayman's available and they can't turn to him in any moment. It doesn't seem like there's any physical limitations there. So I think that's the biggest question mark is just, what led into the decision to, you know, stay the course with Ulmark and go away from that goalie rotation that worked seamlessly all year long? Like, what led into leading to six straight stats? Now, was Swayman hurt? Or was there anything else we don't know? We'll see if we get any more information on that. But that's the thing that just is puzzling to me. And you can look at other things, right? We can look at the lineups, the forward lines in game five, the defense in game six, and not making adjustments there. Obviously fighting through Florida's forecheck and not making really any big adjustments there. But I think when you look at just that situation of how they handle the goaltending, the fact that Montgomery opened the door for Swayman to get into a couple of games earlier, right? Like you look at Ulmark being listed as a game time decision before game three, missing a few morning skates. Like this wasn't like something that was off the table or it's like, no, Ulmark's our number one. We're going to stick with him unless something goes really wrong. You can't like toss out that, you know, safety net of Swayman and what he can bring to this team and then just go away from it. So I think that's the biggest thing is just what led into that decision, because sure seems costly now in hindsight, doesn't it, Evan?
It seems very costly. And I, the other thing that I don't understand with it is like, you know, there's been talk of like, oh, you know, if Ulmark's going to play forever, right? Or, you know, I think it comes down to they thought that, you know, the old school hockey mentality is you ride one goalie throughout the entire playoffs and you just leave it all out there. And we said throughout the season, if anything was going to fail this team, it's the goaltending, because neither have the record, the pedigree, you know, in the past to show that they can handle 20 something games over the course of 3 months every other night. Now, should the Bruins have played Ulmark, you know, 60 something games this year? I still don't think that's the answer. I still don't think you build him up. I think they had it right. You rest both, so they're both fresh, and you continue on that. And I know that like the goaltending, the going back and forth is not the normal thing to do in the playoffs, but you also weren't a normal team. Like there's a reason you won so many games, and there's a lot of things that didn't go your way in the playoffs. Obviously your defense was garbage. Like there were clear, you know, you didn't make adjustments. Your line combinations were all over the place. I mean, they malfunctioned. It's like you poured water all over your keyboard come the playoffs. I mean, the batteries fell out of the controller, but
the computer exploded.
Yes. Like it just like your Xbox fell off the dresser and hit the ground. But again, if they just put Swayman in game six for Ulmark, I think that makes a huge difference. If you see Ulmark's clearly not right, You could see Montgomery on the bench. Nesson panned over to it. You were there. I don't know if you saw this. And I was mad I didn't clip it in the moment because I think I was even like, what the hell? And I missed it. But Nesson got a quick clip of Montgomery like losing his mind on the bench. I forget which goal it was. But at some point, if you just made the change in game six to Swayman, I think that makes a difference. Now, that's late. And hindsight is 20/20. We are armchair coaching right now. But I still don't understand how, as you said, how Swayman never went in either before game five or after game five. I don't understand that.
And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head in terms of, yeah, it's like unconventional for a goalie rotation to go into the playoffs, but this team was unconventional. This team set record. It's a different sport, I know, but like, I guarantee you people who watch the NBA in the 80s and 90s see like what the Golden State Warriors were doing and being like, what the hell are these guys doing? Dropping threes. Their big man is like 6'8". They're powerful.
They're never going to win.
What the hell is this? And you know what? Like, again, if you have an unconventional team or something that goes against the grain and it works, stick with it. I know it's two different sports, but if there's ever a team that's going to, you know, fight back against like previous thought, you know, conventions in terms of how you roll out a Stanley Cup winning roster, probably the team that won 65 games, probably the team that had a 40 win goalie and a 20 win goalie on the same roster, right? Like if there's any team that was gonna, should have the leeway and the confidence to do that, it should be the Boston Bruins, and they strayed away from it. And it's puzzling, Evan. I think as Jim Montgomery said, it was stupefying.
Afterward. You hit it there. Like no, and we said this on Bruins Beat, and we've said it in other places, just no confidence. Like once they lost that game in game two, you know, again, they won games three and four. You know, they made it, you know, they switched up the lines a lot, but just stuff out of it there that didn't seem like they had the confidence of the greatest regular season team ever. Like that little shred of doubt kicked in and all hell kind of broke loose. And obviously, you know, what happened on defense? I mean, my God. I mean, I know the advanced stats support Hampus Lindholm. He was bad. Charlie McAvoy had a bad series. Dmitry Orlov had a lot of points. I just felt in his own zone, though, that the play wasn't up to par. Clifton, obviously, was just dreadful in his appearances. So lots of unanswered questions there. Going forward, though, I think the big question now, what is next for Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci? We had the same questions about Bergeron last year. And we had the same questions about Krejci 2 years ago. But it's now, again, we'll get into how we feel about both and whether or not they should come back, whether they will come back. But we both said with Bergeron, seemed very close last year to potentially hanging it up. And now here we are again. Where do you feel those two stand?
Yeah, I mean, again, this is not with any set, you know, insider or what have you, just
hashtag insider.
Yeah, I think gut. I think Krejci's calling it a career. He mentioned how tough this season was because he was up here pretty much on business, getting one last ride, you know, with his teammates while his family was down in South Carolina. I think he's gonna hang him up and call it a career. And it's a shame that it's a typical Krejci, right? Getting 3-point game in a game seven, doing what he can to will this team further along. But I think that might be it for him. Bergeron, I don't know. I think it's a lot closer than, you know, it's kind of the same thing as last year. I think people look in the moment of the optics of how emotional these guys are when a season ends, especially when the stakes involved. You looked at how it was last year in Carolina, and like Marchand was like in tears in his presser being like, shit, this might be it, huh? And then like a few days later, Bergeron talks about needing time, and you know, a few weeks later, he's back in it. Kind of the same thing where I think you look at the stakes involved with this year and, you know, him saluting the crowd, what have you, and you feel it's kind of that same gut feeling, but we'll see. I mean, Bergeron pretty much mentioned that even, you know, he wasn't sure if this team won the cup, he would have retired then. I mean, I think he's just, the way he's wired, it's just feeling how healthy he is. And he mentioned that obviously you have the back injury, the ill-timed one in the last game of the regular season, but beyond that, he felt pretty healthy. Felt he was still playing at a high level. I mean, this is a guy that still won the Selke. You know, he probably will win the Selke, I think, in a couple of months of what he brings. So I think for him, it all comes down to whether or not he still thinks he has more left in the tank. It's just Would I put it past him to come back? No. I think he still thinks it's a pretty competitive team, and we'll get into that later. I don't think money is a thing that drives him. So even though he probably has to sign for, what, $1 million? Probably is what it's going to have to be, something like that. I don't think that's really a big hindrance towards him, and I think he can still help this team. It's just, do you want to go through a whole 82-game stretch again, right, where you open the door for play to decline? You look at open the door for an injury to happen earlier on that's more severe, right? Like, again, you look at quite a few guys in the locker room after on breakup day. Of course, you have the bumps and bruises, but a lot of guys said they were pretty healthy. You know, a lot of guys avoided really serious injuries throughout this year once the regular season started. So I think Bergeron has to weigh that along with everything else that's on his plate with obviously family and all these other commitments that go beyond the sport of hockey. But if I told you, if you asked me like right as game seven ended, I'd be like 20% chance that Bergeron's back. If that, I'd give more like 60. If you want to ask me, I'd say 60% he's back. But again, I don't think you can blame him either way, especially if he decides to call it quits, because he's given it his all for many years now, and especially this year where it seemed like this team had all the pieces in place to go on a deep run.
I think Krejci's gone. I do. Again, I just think, you know, came back for one last ride. Good for him. Hell of a career. We, you know, we'll get into that when, if and when that officially gets announced. Bergeron, I feel 50-50 on. I'm like you. Right after game seven, I said he's definitely done. But as the smoke has cleared and he spoke on breakup day on Tuesday, and also considering that next year is the 100th year and it's a big year for the Bruins, he'd be the captain for it. I think that means something. Maybe that brings him back. Obviously the roster's got to be good. But there's a small part of me, Connor, small part of me that almost wants to say they've been running it back for a while. And if it didn't happen this year, is it going to happen in the future? And maybe it is time to look at the future of down the middle. Now, maybe you can still do that if Krejci goes and Bergeron stays. And if you can do that, great. Like, if you can have Bergeron come back for $1 million in your top six, heck yeah. I mean, absolutely. But there's part of me that wants to say, hey, you know what? Let's see what they can do with this next core. You know, let's see what this next group can bring. Now, again, I know that might be unpopular. And again, if you can get Bergeron back for $1 million, like, do it. I'm not saying don't. But there's that part of it. It's like, I'm curious what they would do. Like, what? How would Jim Montgomery coach? That's, I think, a huge one if Bergeron goes. What can this future core of McAvoy, Pastrnak, Carlo, Swayman, like, what can they kind of muster up? What would Don Sweeney do? What trades would they make? So there's part of me that would want to see that and that next crew in. But again, I, as you said, it feels like there's a chance he comes back, which is a good thing. Yeah. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. Do not misconstrue that. It's a good thing.
I think it's also one of those things where Marchand kind of touched on, and it's not to say that this team is reliant on Bergeron to bail him out, but you kind of need him to bail you out for at least one more year. Marchand kind of mentioned it, that beyond the fact you still have a pretty good core in place, when you look at the bonus overages, you look at the cap not jumping up, Marchand pretty much said, like, next year, depending on what happens, like, we'll still have a pretty good team, and the cap's going to, as he said, I think he said explode next year, which, again, remains to be seen how much that is going to jump up. But if it goes
we're waiting for that cap explosion.
Yeah, but if you can, you know, run it back for one more year with Bergeron at least taking up one of those spots, and you sort out Fusi, however it is, Zacha, Coyle, another addition, what have you, you still have a competitive team, then the next year you have those bonus overages off the books plus an extra, you know, $4 million or whatever it is once the escrow is finally paid off, then you're able to do more of a actual reset, as opposed to, I think right now where you're kind of, your cap is jammed in this,
you're treading water.
Yeah, you kind of have to bridge it. Now, it's not to say there's going to be a bridge year, Bergeron back, and you roll back a lot of the same guys. You'll still be competitive, which we'll touch on. But I think having Bergeron back as one of your top six centers at a cheap deal helps you get past these kind of stormy waters you have to deal with this year in terms of the cap not jumping up and those bonus overages really kind of freezing you out in terms of how much financial wiggle room you kind of have.
So, Connor, we touched on a little with the cap crunch, which is not easy. but they're still going to be good. Like, I think people don't, you know, who knows what they'll do with hockey trades this offseason. We'll get into that in later episodes. I don't want to, we have a long summer ahead of us, Connor. I want to use up too much of our ammunition.
Sure do.
But still, it's a good team. Like, the core is there again. And as people will find out, you know, found out this postseason, maybe you don't want to be that good. Like, maybe you do just want to be a three seed in the Atlantic and just kind of, or a wild card team or whatever. I'm not advocating for that, but they're still going to be good. You know, again, doesn't help that their center depth isn't where it is. Again, Pavel Zacha is there. You know, he can be a top six center. David Pastrnak's locked up. Charlie McAvoy, Hampus Lindholm. I know everyone's kind of cold on Lindholm right now, but hey, at least you know he's going to be good during the regular season. But I still think, like, there's a core there that you'll at least be competitive. Now, the rest of the Atlantic is going to be getting better, which does not help. But
yeah,
you'll be all right, I think.
Yeah. It's not to, like, parade out the sunshine and rainbows, but yeah, I think there's, in the immediate aftermath, people who are like, either blow it up or this core is done. No, you still have a framework of a roster in place that is still going to get 95 to 105 points. They're still going to be in the picture. And as you said, I think maybe the main lesson we draw from this, punch your ticket to the playoffs, get hot at the right time, and hell, who knows what the hell happens, right? So I think you look at this team, and obviously I think having one of Bergeron and Krejci back helps tremendously in terms of stuff, you know, settling back into place. But you kind of said it, whether it's – and again, remains to be seen if you got to move out contracts to make some of this money work. But even if we're not looking at the Pertuzzis or the Orlovs, what have you, whether it's – you know, Marchand with a full summer being healthy, DeBrusque, Hall, Coyle, Zacha in their roles. Again, they both did very well in those limited times there. Is it, can you sustain that for an 82-game season? Remains to be seen, but if you give Zacha a guy like Pastrnak all year, certainly helps. You got McAvoy, Lindholm. If the goalie rotation comes back, again, both showed very, very strong returns last year in terms of what they provided. And again, you add in the fact that they'll be saving money by creating probably larger roles for some younger players, right? Does, you know, Jakub Lauko step into a larger role? Does a guy like Beecher or McLaughlin come up from Providence? Is this an opportunity for a guy like Georgi Mrkulov or Fabian Lysell to step into like a third line role every day? So yeah, it's not what people want to hear when you have a monumental collapse like this, but team's still going to be good. Like, not like they're going to be competitive. They will be good. They are still going to make some noise, and they still have a lot of talent in place. Now, again, I think Don Sweeney needs to make some moves to either free up cap or shovel some things around. That's very evident. But even when you look at the various guys you can slot in and out of the lineup, in terms of the core framework of guys you have signed long term, still have a lot to work with. So it's not what I think people want to hear. People don't want to hear about this team going for it again, but the way the team's built, like Charlie Jacobs mentioned it last year, this is a team that doesn't want to sell. And again, not like you're really in the position to do it anyway with the amount of draft capital you have, which is not a lot over the next couple of years. So it's one thing to be like, I think the Red Wings in, you know, 2011 to like 2014, where like they're clearly all declining and everyone's older. When you have guys like McAvoy and Pastrnak and these other players, and you can still add younger talent coming up through the system, you're still going to be competitive. You know, it's not to say they're going to automatically go back to being a 55 win team, but they will be in the mix and they're still going to be pretty good. So again, it's going to be a really fascinating offseason, but I think people have to realize that it's not like, I think Sweeney has to make 7 or 8 moves just to keep the ship afloat. Like, they're maybe taking on a little bit of water, but they're still going to be upright. They're still going to be a very, very good team in the East, especially. And I think, as you said, lesson learned, as long as you're in the playoff picture, hell.
Shit happens. I know we both think that there should be some serious trades made, shake some things up. We'll get into that in later episodes. So I don't want to use it all on today's show. The one thing that I would say, though, is it feels like they've been saying that for a while of, let's run it back. Bergeron, you got one more year. Can you just stay? Let's just push this problem down the road one more year. Now, again, they fixed a little bit of it with Pavel Zacha. Like, you do know you have something in Zacha where he can be a 2C. We know that. But it just feels like it's just, you know, pushing things out one more year is fine. But then again, I think they did the right thing this year with, you know, moving out draft picks to try to win now. I get that. I understood that. But, you know, to push the problem down the road one more year, but then to also not even have any of that draft capital, I don't know what, like, what's the move there? I don't see it. Again, I still think they can go out this offseason and try to make a move for a top six center. I think they should do that, whether Bergeron comes back or not. But, you know, we'll see what ends up happening. Obviously, the cap is not helping them. And then when Florida plays Seattle in the cup final, that's really not going to help the cap down the road, which should be just outstanding stuff. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it's not an ideal situation, but at least you have Pastrnak, McAvoy, DeBrusque. And we can get into whether or not, you know, DeBrusque should be traded or Carlo and stuff like that. But we can get into that later. Doesn't have to be today. Connor, what can people look forward to from you over Boston.com and the Boston Globe?
Yeah, going to have you covered throughout this very seismic offseason, I guess is the best way to put it. We'll have you covered every step of the way from end-of-season press conferences, free agency, trades, the draft, dev camp, all of it. We'll have you covered every step of the way. So please follow over there at Boston.com. If you're going to follow me on Twitter, you can at ConnorRyan_93.
Go do all that. That's Connor Ryan. I'm Evan Marinofsky. Poke the Bear. Listeners, have a great rest of your week.